Welcome to tonight's episode of the Remso Martinez Experience. Before we get started, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to some of this episode's sponsors. From self-publishing to podcasting and passive income development, I offer ongoing self-development courses at Champion Pundit Academy, as well as one-on-one private consultations to take you from zero to hero in no time. Learn more at championpunditacademy.com. That's championpunditacademy.com. And are you looking for a short but laugh-out-loud reading experience that combines everything you love about life and also everything you hate about politics? Well, learn about the journey of yours truly as I venture to learn more about the wild and wacky world of libertarians, you know, the ones that your parents probably warned you about. You can grab a print or Kindle e-reader copy of my book, Stay Away from the Libertarians, today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble Online. That's Stay Away from the Libertarians, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble Online.
Hey, I'm Matt Conroy, country Americana songwriter and recording artist, and you're listening to the Remso Martinez Experience.
Welcome back to the Remso Martinez Experience. Hope everyone had a good Christmas. Everybody deserves, you know, one day of the year where other people get them stuff. And, you know, if you didn't have a good time with family and everything else, if you were working, if you were one of those guys like at the movie theater who have to go rip tickets on Christmas Day, you know, I hope you had a good one too. I hope you had a warm night and, you know, wherever you are, baby, I hope it wasn't too cold outside. It's great to have you here. It's not a holiday without a funeral, and today we're going to be eulogizing the Weekly Standard, talking about its legacy and some of the other problems of legacy media. But it'd be boring if I did this myself. I want to go ahead and bring on the two of the whitest guys I know. First is the editor from thank God for editing. First is the editor, my friend Brian Nichols at the Libertarian Republic, host of the Brian Nichols Show. Brian, thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Remso. I really do appreciate the opportunity to introduce myself to your audience.
And you sound way more chipper than me. This is going to be a long one. And we have the host of the Muddy Waters of Freedom and the Writer's Block. He recently came out with his second novel, Can You Keep a Secret? Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Wright. Matt, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Remso? Glad to be here.
Glad to have you too. So, gentlemen, I'll start with Brian on this one since you seem to have more energy. That way Matt and I can go ahead and catch up to you. Last week, well, more like about a week and a half ago, Fred Barnes and Bill Kristol's magazine, The Weekly Standard, died after 23 years, which is weird because I found out I am older than The Weekly Standard and I have outlived The Weekly Standard, which is a weird thing. They were a neoconservative outlet that was rather known for promoting the Iraq War, plenty of policies. They loved the folks such as Marco Rubio, John McCain, the whole neoconservative like. And now in this post-Never-Trump era, they seem to have just thrown in the towel. With that said, a lot of the reaction has been just kind of stupid. And Brian, I'll be completely honest. You know, I did not love the Weekly Standard. I'm upset that people lost their job. At the end of the day, I don't necessarily see this as, you know, as a referendum of the Never Trump wing of the GOP. I just think that's more of a problem with legacy media. No one buys magazines anymore. And yep. The Weekly Standard never made money. And to be completely honest, I have read two issues of the Weekly Standard my entire life. So it's not that big of a deal. They had some good writers. I liked a lot of the stories they wrote about Evan McMullen in 2016. And I loved their sports section that came out on Tuesdays. I mean, that was about it online. That was most of my interaction with the Weekly Standard. They had good sports commentary. That's all I really cared about. So what's how do you think people have been treating them? Too harshly or not harshly enough?
Oh, I mean, it's like any death. You'd like to give a little bit of a breather afterwards and let people collect themselves, and then you can hopefully go ahead and objectively talk about it, right?
Like, this is coming out right after Christmas, so everyone was nice to each other. Now they can go back to lobbing shit everywhere.
that's pretty accurate. Let's you know, reveal what's happened today, obviously, with Trump saying he's pulling out of Syria. And you see the exact same folks who would be, you know, carrying the mantle for foreign interventions. They're the same ones who are, you know, defending the Weekly Standard just earlier this week are now the ones who are decrying Trump for going out of his way to pull ourselves out of Syria and to
You're telling me that Trump killed both the Weekly Standard and ISIS at the same time?
He Thanos'd it. He just snapped his fingers, and all of a sudden, the neoconservatism in America just completely vanished.
I'll stop interrupting.
Max Boot weeps. Max Boot weeps. And to quote Julie Borowski, sometimes it's just good to pull out. So here we are. I mean, it's amazing to see the neoconservative wing of the conservative Republican movement takes such a big hit this week. But like you said, I don't think that this is in any way, shape, or form the end of neoconservatism, the end of the Never Trump movement. It's just a regrouping. I mean, you still have people like Marco Rubio. You still have people like Ben Sasse, and you still have the voices like a Max Boot or a Bill Kristol, who are still going to be out there. They're still going to be pushing and advocating for these war hawk neoconservative principles. And the reality is that there is a great number of people, not only within the greater Republican movement, who are on their side, but they're with this Never Trump era, there is a lot of people on the left who look at these voices of Never Trump Republicanism, and they empathize and sympathize with their views, because their views are anti-Trump. Their views are the opposite of what Trump is promoting. So they kind of morph into this weird dichotomy of being leftists while also promoting neoconservative policies. I mean, one of the Krasenstein brothers, whatever the hell they are on Twitter.
I'm not
going
to pretend to know how to pronounce their names.
And honestly, their names don't matter, but they're two of the biggest, you know, anti-Trump trolls on Twitter. And one of them, I found it very funny. He's like, you're doing just what Russia wants. And it's like, when did the left like promote the idea of being over in foreign conflicts? I mean, I remember, I'm old enough to remember under George W. Bush, all the anti-war Democrats and the anti-war left, and then they got really quiet under Obama, and now it's like they've done a complete 180, and they're actually advocating for having American forces overseas to quote unquote keep Russia in line. It's like the ideas and the principles of leftism and progressivism in America have gotten so absolutely skewed, and it's all thanks to Trump. Like, if Trump has done one thing right, and we can walk away from the Trump era, whenever that ends, whether it's 2020 or 2024.
Oh no, it's going to be 2024.
I fully believe that too.
Let there be no confusion. It's going to be 2024.
But if we walk away from this administration with one thing, it's that Trump has shown how full of shit the people on the left were when they are screaming that they were anti-war. He has, and not only just them, but the folks who claim to be against big government, the folks who claim to be in favor of constitutionality and conservative, or even hell, some libertarian ideals of government. He has shown those people who were just doing lip service to be the complete frauds that they were, the complete opportunists that they were. And that's not any credit to Trump. It's just Trump is that type of person. He doesn't have any principles. He doesn't care. And he's made those people show that they don't care either. They just want power. And at the end of the day, if we walk away from Trump's presidency is anything, it's that idea of, well, you know what, here we've cleansed the entire political atmosphere. We can see who's real, who's not, and the people who are real we need to embrace. For all of her sins, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's a whack job. Her policies are horrible, but she's real. She believes what she believes. Same thing with Bernie Sanders. I think his policies are horrible. They're abhorrent. They're statist. They're gross. But he believes what he believes. He's not somebody who's just doing lip service to make people feel good and fuzzy inside. He actually actually believes this stuff. And I think we need to have more of these intense philosophical debates with the other side that we completely disagree with, but to actually have real conversations instead of having Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio on stage trying to debate which neoconservative principle or policy is going to be better. Do we bomb Russia, you know, next year, or do we wait 5 years to bomb Russia? Oh, let's wait and see how you know, the Middle East looks. Like, no, let's actually have real tangible conversations. And I don't think that that's happened before up until Trump, because Trump has gotten rid of this facade of everybody gets along in politics. And we kind of saw that start to crumble away with the Bush era ending back in 2016 with Jeb not getting the nomination. And then with just the slow, you know, decay of this neoconservatism throughout the past 2 years. So as much as I hate to see, like you said, Remzo, people lose their jobs at Christmas time, you know what? It's time to have a breath of fresh air and actually discuss the issues in a more tangible, realistic sense instead of embracing this neoconservative war hawk mentality.
Or you could be like Randall Grinch Paul and take a shit on everybody. But moving on to Matt, you know, I think Brian brings up a very good point, Matt. We need to have this conversation. And as our token neocon chill, what will you miss about your loving relationship with the Weekly Standard and Bill Kristol?
So I'm probably the only person in the Liberty Movement, it seems, that's old enough to remember when the Liberty Standard started. And, like, I was...
You mean the Weekly Standard?
Yeah, what did I say?
The Liberty Standard.
The Liberty Standard, yeah, Weekly Standard.
It's all the same, right?
You know, there are certain groups out there that just, you know, Liberty just means anything. But I remember when the Weekly Standard started. They were being advertised on 6:30 a.m. up in D.C., where I grew up. And so me being the very young neocon that I was, got a subscription, and I used to read it at a very young age because I was insane then, just as I am now. And, and you know, they're very anti-Clinton and very pro, you know, and then Bush got elected and they were very pro-Bush and, you know, very neocon. They supported the Iraq War. Many people were saying that the Iraq War came from their own policy ideas that they put in the Weekly Standard. And as I got older and I started gaining IQ points, I guess, I don't really know how else
to put that. You stopped licking lead paint walls, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
We're gonna bomb some motherfucker. We're gonna stay there.
I stopped wanting to just like randomly pick a place on a map and go, yeah, let's just go there and create democracy.
I guess I hate those people today.
Yeah, and I don't even know where that place is, but fuck those guys. But yeah, as I got older, I was just kind of like, okay, well, the subscription had long since ended because drugs were a lot more fun than magazine subscriptions. And so I was like, well, I'm never going to get that back now that I'm sober. And, but you know, like they've always kind of, all of their articles from the time that I remember reading them, they were this pompous, conceitingly arrogant, pseudo intelligent, like they were trying to give off this, perception of, like the back room, or maybe like the library, like the group of guys in a library, old dudes with the handlebar mustaches and smoking jackets.
It's that scene from Family Guy when Brian goes to Brown and or is it Brown or wherever Brown. The hell it is.
And
they're, you know, we talk like this. That exactly. Is exactly what. Yes.
And that's kind of the voice that they were going for in today's day and age, when you have, even though like Ben Shapiro is pretty much a neocon, but you've got your Ben Shapiros and your Crowders and like your Andrew Heatons.
Okay,
and then,
listen, I can't let you say anything about the guy that helped sell my book. Okay, cut that shit out. Okay,
no,
I'm
no.
A shill. No, you're right though, and that is a strange thing. That is the strange thing about it. Like, you know, this legacy still is there, and to say that Bill Kristol is not an influential person, I think a lot of people really downgrade it because, you know, I publicly disagree with a lot of Ben Shapiro's foreign policy. But, you know, the thing is, like, the biggest thing that has bugged me about the death of the Weekly Standard is that a lot of people have been saying, oh, these guys caused the Iraq War and all this other stuff. And I think one that's very callous, it's like kicking someone while they're down. I think the only people that should be blamed for the war in Iraq are the people that voted for it. Secondly, I mean, I don't know why we don't apply the same standard to like Fox News and CNN when they worked with a PR firm in DC to fabricate a lot of the testimonials regarding the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait. When they got that one guy's daughter, who was an actress, to pretend to be a Kuwaiti citizen who just wound up in front of a congressional hearing, and she said that Saddam was sending soldiers into hospitals to kill babies in incubators with hammers. I mean, no one's really saying that Fox News started the Gulf War and then Fox News and CNN were reporting, you know, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and it just seems like they get the pass. But I think a lot of people just have very selective memory when it comes to that.
Well, yeah, but the only reason that nobody's saying that about Fox News right now is because they didn't go out of business.
True.
If they were the ones that was going out of business, everybody would – you'd have the people that were lamenting it and being like, oh, this is awful for all the people that work for Fox News. And then you'd have the other people who'd be going, these people are the ones who created the Persian Gulf War. They got George Bush elected. They got Trump elected. Like, they would be attacking for the reasons that they hate them. So since Fox News is still around, nobody's really attacking them for these things. But since the Weekly Standard is now gone away, people are attacking it because, you know, kick a dead horse, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, I did not like John McCain. When he died, I didn't really say anything about him. And, you know, I'm not even really a Bush 41 fan, but I didn't really say anything about him. Like, Bill Clinton could die tomorrow, and I'm not going to say anything negative about Bill Clinton. It's just, you know, you see a lot of people's true colors come out. And, you know, I'm all about the concept that, you know, you don't have to be you can be like, this is going to sound really weird. You can be a jerk. Like, I don't think it's a sin to be a jerk, but I don't think it's acceptable to not have any class. Because when you're just going and attacking people, it just comes off very unbecoming. And, you know, Cliff Maloney, and, you know, everyone loves him. And, you know, this is not a criticism of him, but, you know, I got a couple angry messages online because I retweeted a tweet by Cliff, the president of Yale, and he was making a very disparaging comment of the Weekly Standard. And I was like, you know, doing this around Christmas is not how you spread liberty. So I don't think like pissing on the graves of your opponents is really going to win you any favors. It's only going to really just rile up the people that already agree with you, which is what everyone that you oppose already does when bad things happen to us. So we can at least, you know, behave in a way which doesn't make us just seem like children.
I agree. But you also have the opposite side of that same coin of the lip service care that people give whenever something like this happens, and they're like, oh, like the people who didn't like Bush 41 or didn't like John McCain when they passed, you know, oh, he was a hero, he was a national treasure, whatever, blah blah blah. Last week you were saying you couldn't wait for his tumor to kick in. So like
hashtag karma cancer was like a real thing.
Right.
And I may have laughed at that until he actually died, and then I felt kind of like a shitty person.
Right. And I mean,
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at it again.
I mean, so if I can, like, I think one thing that's really important for us to acknowledge, though, is that while it's important to be classy, like, we still have to, I think we have a responsibility to stand up and be like, no, what they stood for wasn't good. And we shouldn't be celebrating what they were, because I mean, let's be real, right? Like if tomorrow, I mean, let's just acknowledge the elephant in the room. At some point in the near future, the great Ron Paul is going to pass away. It's going to happen. And when he does, do you think that they're going to give Ron Paul
your whore mouth?
I know. But like, do we really think that they're going to give Ron Paul the just fawning eulogy
they
did with John McCain and George H. Bush? Of course not. They're not going to call John McCain or Ron Paul a maverick like they called John McCain, even when like Ron Paul was easily the most hated member of the GOP in 2008 and 2012 because he was standing up to the establishment saying, no, what we're doing is wrong and what we've been doing has been causing a lot more problems than it has been good. Like, they're not going to eulogize him the same way. And I think we have to remember that while we can be classy, we can still point out what they were promoting was wrong. And I think it's actually our responsibility to actually do that.
Brian, you actually wrote a pretty controversial article telling people to stop attacking, AOC. And, that's my father's favorite person because he likes to wake up every morning and find a reason to hate her. And, honestly, like, I think people give her too much credit because, like, she was nobody until conservative media tried to make her into, like, the next Bin Laden. And yep. Then, I mean, she won against a very unpopular incumbent. She was in, like, a D+12 district in New York. And, like, she was just there was no way she was not going to win. It's like the planets aligned for this person. And suddenly that's just how the odds went in her favor. So I think a lot of people give her too much credit. She's not that powerful. She's not that influential. She hasn't even sworn in yet. But she had to take a mental health break.
I would actually take issue there, though. I think she is influential. I think that's one area where a lot of libertarians and conservatives are they're turning a blind eye. She has a following of people that it goes beyond the political chamber that we're used to, like the political.
I mean, so does Taylor Swift, but she didn't necessarily help the chick that she endorsed in Tennessee. And I think
she endorsed a guy, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, she did endorse a guy.
She endorsed the guy. But
yeah, like, she went against Marsha Blackburn.
Yeah.
But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she could easily be, like, in 10, 15 years, the senior senator from New York replacing Chuck Schumer. And I could easily see her try to run for president in, like, 10, 15 years when she's old enough. And I think we have to acknowledge that, like, while Taylor Swift, yeah, she has a following and she wasn't able to mobilize – Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not only did she mobilize her group within her own core, yes, very progressive district, she unseated a 10-term congressman who was like the third-ranked congressman in the Democratic caucus. And then she is taking that platform, and she is reaching quite literally millions of people. And the only reason that she gets so much notice, like you mentioned, Remzo, is that the conservative media uses any gaffe she does to just put her on blast. And yes, it's fun for people on our side of the political aisle to laugh, but for the people on the other side of the political aisle, whenever they see a gaffe from her, they see themselves in her. They see someone who's not as educated in politics. They don't know that particular nuances with the way government works, what have you. They don't care because she's promoting ideas and she's speaking to them as individuals saying, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help take care of you and I'm going to use government to do it. And that's where we have to say, no, that's where the real problem is. It's not that she makes stupid mistakes and she has these stupid gaffes. It's her ideas are dangerous. And we have to promote our ideas in a better way saying, hey, listen, we want the same end goal. We want you and your family to be able to be taken care of. But we don't see government as the means to take care of you. We want you to be able to empower yourself, to have the ability to use your resources around you, to use your personal affects, to use your intelligence to better yourself and to better your family, then leave your family in a better position down the road. If we're not making that argument, and she is, she's going to win those people over hand over fist, and they're going to be a base that's going to support her going forward. And I think we really have to have this come to Jesus moment, look ourselves in the mirror and say, like, what are we actually doing when we're putting her on blast and giving her this free airtime?
And, you know, you bring up something so important, and I want what I'm about to say lead into my next question with Matt. Each time AOC says a gaffe or something, like, that's free media. And everything you said, Brian, about how her base sees it is just right on the money. So very few people understand that. I mean, Trump, with all the negative attention he got in 2016, it's been estimated that he received over, I think it was $9 billion in free advertising.
And that was a point of my article. I made that a very specific point.
Yes.
The supporters of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are the foil of your average Trump supporter. When you make fun of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they see it as you making fun of them. Just as when you were going after Trump, you would have people, you know, say, well, you're going after me. When you call Trump a deplorable and then you label him as and us as the basket of deplorables, then you're talking to all of us. So you call Trump stupid. You call Trump, Russian agent, whatever you want to call him. You're calling all of us that. And that's what really builds this polarized, strongly focused base that's willing to do whatever they want, whatever they can do to back them up. And people aren't realizing that.
Matt, so I kind of want to pivot on this. You built up the Muddy Waters of Media with Spike Cohen and Muhammad Shaker. You guys built that from scratch, and as a live stream and podcast, you guys have been able to build an audience. What you really do at the Muddy Waters of Freedom is you really do represent this new strain of alternative media. With the death of the Weekly Standard, which I don't necessarily even consider conservative media, I consider it legacy media. Like, it was just one of those establishment outlets. And now what you have with, the Blaze and CRTV merger, where people just think, oh, okay, it's just conservative, boomer, conservative central, as the great leader Chris Spangle at We Are Libertarians always says. What role do you see alternative media playing? Because for a while it seemed to be really booming, then it kind of waned down after 2016, and now people are really starting to understand it, especially with the censorship and persecution of independent journalists and content creators. Do you see this role that you play growing, or do you see more challenges preventing you from reaching the levels you want to achieve?
Honestly, I see we've experienced a ton of growth over the last few months. It's been insane. Our numbers have almost quadrupled over the last few months. The numbers of people who are following us on all of our social medias have been growing. We get more people who are interested in coming on the shows. We get more people who are who ask us about what's going to be going on the shows. I really think that the alternative media, people are definitely straying away from mainstream media because, they don't trust your Fox. They don't trust CNN. They don't trust MSNBC. They don't trust the Washington Post or the New York Times. They don't trust any of those. They're going to the blogs and they're going to the podcasts because we're the ones that are telling the stories in kind of the most non-biased way.
Because you're putting your bias out there.
Right,
and this
we're 100% saying what we. This is what we believe. You may say that we're libtards. You may say that we're trumpeters. You may say that whatever. But at the end of the day, we know what we are, and we know what we believe, and we do the news. We report the news based on that.
Exactly, and this is why people get a little surprised. My two favorite journalists ever are Hunter S. Thompson and Charlie LaDuff, and they are far from what you would consider right-wingers at all. And, Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail 72, I think, is the best political, reporting and coverage in American history, and what LaDuff has done with his book Detroit and his recent book, which I'm reading right now, Shit Show. It's gonzo journalism in its best form, because people just want to know what you're seeing, even with the bias and everything else. When you're honest, they can pick out the facts on what's the skewed portion together. So, I think you guys are really hitting that, and I'm glad you're growing. I'd like to throw the same question to Brian. With We Are Libertarians, I know that the main editor, Chris Spangle, he was censored on Facebook. You guys have seen a lot of your reach go down, and I can only imagine what things have been like at the Libertarian Republic. What have been the challenges you're facing, and what are you worried about, especially as Google and Facebook and even Twitter to a large degree? It seems to be that they're pretty open about what they're doing, and they don't seem to care that people now know that they're very biased and very corrupt.
I mean, absolutely. And you and I talked about it on my show, which is the Brian Eccles
show. I was a freaking Nostradamus.
and folks, you can find the Brian Eccles show over whatever you find podcasts, just a heads up. But you are on my show, we talked about this, where you have these media companies who are openly going out of their way to censor and deplatform various forms of alternative media that they find quote unquote offensive. And they don't tell you what the offensive language is. And I mean, Chris Spangle from We Are Libertarians, he's come out and he said, you know, I fully anticipate We Are Libertarians will not be on Facebook within the next 2 years or so. He's hoping, he fingers crossed, he's hoping that we get to the 2020 election, because Facebook has made it a point to show that they're going out of their way to censor these alternative voices. We saw it happen with the Free Thought Project. We saw it happen with Police the Police. Remzo, we did a whole show talking about what they did with you. So
I'm getting PTSD just thinking about it. Please continue.
Then the question you ask, what do we do? I don't know the answer. I think right now we're seeing there's been a response by folks in the alternative media sphere where we're either A, going to alternative services, or B, we're making our own. So Jordan Peterson, for example, he's making his own content supporting, I guess, website, which would be an alternative to Patreon after what's happened over there at Patreon with their deplatforming of Sargon of Akkad, correct? Was it Sargon?
It was Sargon. And let me tell you, so I have a Patreon for my online business, Champion Pundit Academy. And the thing I do differently from like what you would see on Udemy and teachlessons.com and stuff is I do continuing self-development courses and writing and podcasting and passive income. So it's more of a subscription service. And I think Patreon really, you know, satisfies what I need to do for my students. And as soon as this happened with Sargon of Akkad, like I lost two students because of that. And now I have to figure out how I'm going to be able to redo and, you know, repurpose a lot of my lessons to get away from Patreon. So it's affecting political content. It's just affecting online classes I do simply because I have it on a platform which is really starting to tick people off.
And people are bringing in – they're bringing things in home. So, I mean, you see Jason Stapleton. He's doing all of his payment there on his own website. I mentioned Jordan Peterson doing the same thing. You see organizations like now Blaze TV, or which was the CRTV, with their subscription service, slash like you had Crowder beforehand doing the Mug Club, the Daily Wire, they do the Mug Club. So we're seeing it's a free market response to the deplatforming. And thus far, I mean, from what we've been able to see through the Daily Wire and Blaze TV being the two most, I guess, notable examples, is that it's working. We're seeing people support these organizations with their dollars. And I think like Facebook and the, you know, whether it's Facebook or Google or Twitter or whoever you want to name, I think they're a little surprised because they were able to really throttle the traffic to these organizations via social media, but they can't throttle the traffic for people who are just willingly going to the website. I mean, then we'd be getting to the point of, okay, well, what happens to hosting websites? What happens to payment processing websites? Are they going to be boycotted like they were threatened with InfoWars? And it'll definitely open up a whole can of worms. And I think, you know, that's going to be a very important debate that we're going to have down the road, because if that happens, then we're going to really have to find some alternative, whether it's blockchain technology or something of the likes. And I'm just not sure where we're going to go yet. I mean, I hate to keep on going back to my show. I had Jeremy Kaufman on my show. He's the CEO of a company called Library, and it's a social media company that is entirely based on blockchain technology. So a creator or someone of the sorts posts something on Library, it's there. It can be interacted with, but can never be, you know, removed by the parent company of Library, just per the manner in which the technology works. So maybe that's the alternative. Maybe that will be a company that will pick up and take off and fill the void that's inevitably going to be left by one of these major social media companies that I think we're seeing die right before our very eyes.
And I'm glad you brought up Library, and a big platform that I'm a big supporter of is Minds.com. Minds is another blockchain-based social media company. And folks, you can go ahead and follow me on Minds.com at Remser Republic. Minds is great. You could purchase points using Ethereum. You could use it to boost your views. So one point is one view. So you're guaranteed that from just a marketing angle. Whereas I've spent hundreds of dollars on Facebook, and I never got really a good return on that. But going back to the Weekly Standard, Matt that, you know, you're the only one of the folks on the panel tonight who's actually read the Weekly Standard. In terms of free speech, in terms of a free market, you know, acceptance of the good, the bad, and the ugly, do you think long-term we're better off or worse because a controversial voice, whether you loved it or you hated it, such as the Weekly Standard, is no longer among us?
Well, I mean, the way that I look at it is kind of it's a free market situation on why they're not here anymore. The subscriber base was dwindling because people are leaning further and further away from neoconservatism. More people are kind of leaning toward that libertarian conservative mindset. So there was no need for it anymore. And with the Washington Examiner, growing in popularity and wanting to kind of grow, Media DC, which owned both of them, probably just kind of looked at it and said, okay, well, let's just get rid of the Weekly Standard and push everything into Washington Examiner.
Yeah, and the weird thing, and I forgot who meant – oh, you mentioned this towards the beginning of the show, Matt. It was this hoity-toity, you know – cigar smoke filled rooms mentality, right, that they brought up. You know, I really am not a fan of people that boast about being libertarian or conservative intellectuals. And I really do understand, you know, really your blue collar Trump voter mentality that went up against National Review, that went up against a lot of these other people like George Will. And I respect, you know, National Review and George Will, but I don't think they understand why people got angry. And when they saw that people were getting angry at them, you know, the common response was, well, they're angry because they're stupid. And sadly, that's not much of an exaggeration. That's how a lot of people responded. I actually don't follow David French on Twitter anymore, because David French, and I mean, the guy got a lot of crap in 2016. I talk about it in my book in the chapter on the alt-right. Like, I feel bad for David French and his family. I pray for them and their safety. But David French needs to cool off Twitter and stop getting into fights with people, because he's not benefiting from it at all. And what he needs to understand is that, yeah, he's a writer. I'm a writer. Matt's a writer. Brian, you're a writer. Like, if you insult your audience and then you go to war with your readers, like, they're going to turn on you. And you're not that special in the market. Like, writers, bloggers, it's just the truth. You're not that special. You live and die based off eyeballs. And, you know, the Weekly Standard, to a large degree, like, I loved – the thing I will say is I did love the political cartoons, the caricatures that were on their covers. I will say that. I loved looking at their covers. Yeah. My favorite was of Chris Christie, where they called him the new face of the GOP, and Chris Christie just looks like, you know, King Kong. It was hilarious. So, I mean, they made fun of everybody. The dude from the White House brief at the Blaze TV, like, he did this whole thing just crapping on the Weekly Standard, saying, oh, they attack Trump supporters and everything. Well, obviously, he either didn't do much actual investigating, or he never read the Weekly Standard, or he was just being fed talking points, because they attacked everybody. That's just the thing. Like, you knew where they stood on things, and they attacked everybody pretty openly in their political cartoon. So he was offended about this one where it showed a guy that looks like a redneck. And it's like, I can find a lot of things where they're making fun of Obama and other people. Like, you can just kind of get over it, but I'm rambling. But I really do think that it does say one thing about the current state of affairs. And this is why, like, you know, when Steve Bannon goes on the radio and says he thought that at one point Michael Avenatti could be the Democratic presidential nominee, like, I took him seriously. I actually really did, because gone are the days where people look at people, and this is like Steve Forbes. Like, you know, Steve Forbes was never going to win because people felt like Steve Forbes was an elitist. They said the same thing about Mitt Romney and John Huntsman. They said the same thing about Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. Like, I think America, if it's one thing, it's united on this. It's anti-elitism.
Yeah, and I think if I can go back to the point you made earlier about the Weekly Standard being like, quote unquote, never Trump or anti-Trump, I think it's more beyond just them being anti-Trump, the person. It's anti-Trump what he represents. I mean, think back to the GOP debates there in 2015. There was two people on stage who were really speaking non-interventionalism, as Rand Paul and Donald Trump. And don't get me wrong, I went after Trump like nobody's business back during the primaries because I wanted to see Rand Paul win. And I thought Trump was going to do a horrible disservice to the brand that is Republicanism. And I think that's still, you know, the jury's out on that. But Trump was one of the few voices who was actually saying this neoconservative mentality we've had over the past 20 to – well, I say really 20 years with George H.W. Bush starting it off really in the thick of things. But you have him going on stage, going after Jeb Bush and then going after George W. Bush. And I think that was really the beginning of this never Trump, anti-Trump sentiment within the greater Weekly Standard. And it was based entirely on his not wanting this interventionist policy anymore. And we're seeing again today with Trump pulling out of Syria, like we mentioned earlier, where it's the same voices from the Weekly Standard ilk who are going after Trump's decision. And it's all based on this non-interventionist approach. And I mean, I think for that, Trump absolutely deserves to be lauded. What he's doing is tough when you have so many voices who have been so established for decades now basically having to sit in the sidelines and watch, you know, the backup player come in and start shooting threes. They don't know what to do and they feel like they've been replaced.
Matt, any thoughts?
No, Brian pretty much covered all of it. Like the whole Never Trump movement, you had like Sean Hannity is a good example of this. He was a Never Trumper. He was a Never Trumper in 2016, and then Trump won, and then he said, okay, well, I'm going to just kind of get on board with this. And now he basically loves the man. And like his ratings have been going up at Fox. I think he might be the number one or number two show on Fox right now. And the Weekly Standard never actually – admitting to that and always saying that whatever Trump did was bad just ended up hurting them more and more. So failure to like at least say when he did something right ended up hurting them more than just saying, no, we hate everything that this man does.
Objectivity. It's so desired and craved in our society. Like people want to see objectivity. They look at CNN and if you're on the right, all you see is just this leftist anti-Trump bias. And if people go to Fox News, all they see is this Trump humping conservative bias. Right. People just want to get information and feel like, okay, I just learned something without being, without trying to have some narrative forced down my throat. Like people want that. And like whenever I do articles over at the Libertarian Republic and like when Austin Peterson, we have our various writers and we're presenting a news story. If we're going to present a news story and we're going to give our bias, we'll say this is our bias. But here's the facts. Here's what actually happened. And I think there's going to be – I'm not sure how it's going to approach yet. I'm very curious to see how this is going to transpire in the next 5 to 10 years. But I think there's going to be a news organization that is not around right now that's going to fill in a void, be it on mainstream outlets or through some channel online, that is going to be a real objective alternative to what we are seeing with our mainstream media on television and then the polarized news organizations online right now with the conservative and liberal medias respectively. That's going to happen. I'm like 95% confident of it. I'm just curious to see where it's going to come from or who's going to be the one to really be the kickstart that gets this going. Is it going to be someone like a Jordan Peterson or a Joe Rogan? Probably not, because they're a little more stigmatized with their views. I don't know the answer, honestly, but I'm really excited to see if and when that does happen, because it's something that people are just going crazy for, almost like that local newspaper feel. Like you just read the newspaper and you're like, okay, here's what happened in the city council meeting today. I got the information. I got the exact quotes. Move on to the next section. People want that. It's not in America right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. We've had a great conversation, but I do have one last question for each of you. I'm going to go ahead and start off with Matt. Matt, just gut reaction, who's the next outlet to die?
Man, I want to say CNN, but that's not going to happen because they've got a contract.
Way too optimistic.
Yeah, I was going to say, because
some things just refuse to die.
Yeah. I mean, their contract with the airport makes it so that that's never going to happen. God, that is a hard question. I would probably say New York Times. I could see being next.
I was actually going to say New York Times next.
Yeah, I could see them being next.
I don't think Carlos Slim has enough money to actually save them, and they've been worried about dying since 2006. So I would agree with you on the New York Times. Brian?
So I'm torn because it's either going to be a physical, like you were mentioning, a physical paper entity, or it's going to be
– It could be both.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think the New York Times, if we're going from a true, like, you know, newspaper, that probably is the most – realistic one, but from like an actual polarized landscape, I think Slate. I think Slate has
who owns gotten, Slate?
I forget. Some wacko leftist organization, but I think Slate has gotten far too into the weeds of this intersectionality, hyperpartisan leftism that even some of their members in the left are starting to leave them. Like, I'll give you an anecdote. One of my really, really good buddies, he's always been, you know, moderate to left leaning, and he used to try to read stuff from both the left and the right to kind of get this balanced approach. And I love him for it. I think that's a great approach to have. And he used to look at Slate as like this objective means of looking at progressive ideas. And even now he's like, what am I reading? Like, I can't have an opinion about something because I'm a white male, and he just feels so alienated. So I think that once they start to really turn off those moderate left leaning individuals, that's going to absolutely decimate their readership, and I think they might be the next one to go.
Actually, I'm gonna change my mind. So just to recap, Matt, you said New York Times. Brian, you said Slate. Here's the answer I'm changing it to. I think it's gonna be Playboy. And I'm not saying that to be tongue in cheek. Like, you know, two things. Like, Playboy actually used to have really good articles. Like, they had really good articles. Even way back in the day, they had people like Faulkner writing serials for them. Like, they had a lot of good people writing actual stuff. And there's actually been some really good education reform commentary and criminal justice stories that have been published at Playboy. People just usually don't think of Playboy as an actual publication. Like, the joke is I read it for the articles. But one, they put up a paywall on their stuff. They're not really branching out to freelance writers. And, you know, so that's that end. But also from the porn angle, like, you know, if you actually look at a Playboy magazine, it's actually pretty clean.
And well, yeah, they no said that they were going to stop doing they said that they were going to stop doing naked spreads.
And then they brought it back.
They
brought it back.
Tasteful side boob.
Yeah, like the Sports Illustrated, which never talks about sports, like Sports Illustrated is racier than Playboy. That's just the thing. Playboy really has no place anymore.
Oh, maybe I think I want to change my answer to ESPN.
What?
ESPN is losing people like crazy. They have cut so many positions at ESPN. I mean, just I think it was last year or 2016, they cut like half of their talent because they couldn't afford it.
Well, like, then they were all talking politics. They weren't even talking sports.
That's why people are getting so sick and tired of the political commentary in sports. They're like, well, screw this. I can go to NBA.com and get whatever's happening in the NBA. I can go to NFL.com and get all the happenings there. Like,
yeah, you can go to Bleacher Report and get everything all at once.
Yeah.
But Bleacher Report gets really political, though. Like, they just had an article up about the first transgender sprinter in, I think, Massachusetts, and it was a transgender female, and like she was going against stereotypes and trying to, you know, put a name for herself, and they're like making
so a dude was faster than a lot of women.
Yes. And like, but it was funny because you saw the reaction from people who were Bleacher Report fans, and they were like, what is this? Like, it's a dude running against females, a biological male running against biological females. And yes, he's faster than them. Like, that's how it works. That's biology. But like, I think they're testing the waters. Bleacher Report has been like to see how much they can push to get into that like intersectional little waiting pool without going full ESPN.
I can totally see that. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the only articles that I ever see on Bleacher Report are for the teams that I pick out. Like, I don't see any of the excess articles, and I never pay attention to the notifications because I don't care. I just kind of go through my feed of my teams. So I don't ever see those extra articles. So that's why, for me, it's always been, okay, I know that for the five teams that I root for, I'm going to see all the stuff about them there, and I don't have to worry about ESPN telling me that guns are bad.
Avoid Mike Freeman like the plague. That dude is
he's
awful.
Basically cancer.
He is awful.
He's a hot pile of cancer. Well, yeah, like I work in retail currently, and when I talk sports with customers, like, and I'm not even much of a sports fan. I mean, you know, people are gonna judge me on this, but I think that baseball is my favorite sport. I know people judge baseball in the way they judge soccer, but baseball is my favorite sport. But I like to watch football every once in a while, and I only really watch college football. I don't even watch the NFL. I just watch college games because those guys, unlike the NFL, like, they actually have to try.
that's how I am with basketball. I don't watch the NBA anymore. I stopped watching the NBA 15 years ago.
I've never met that one.
Yeah, I watch college basketball all day, though.
It's so weird. So let's recap this last part because I think this may be the most interesting part. So, Matt. I mean, seriously, like, this is where we're gonna come back in a couple of years. We're gonna be like, wow, I can't believe this of all outlets died before the others. So, Brian, ESPN, me, Playboy, Matt, New York Times.
Yeah.
Wow. All righty. Well, I think this is a great place to wrap up. We'll go ahead and go down the panel for final thoughts. Brian, final thoughts on the stuff we've covered tonight.
I think we're going to see Rand Paul have a real opportunity going to 2024 to carry forward the non-interventionalist approach that Trump has done. I hope that Trump will give him his full blessing when the time comes. Rand Paul has been in Donald Trump's ear for the past few years, and we've seen a lot of Rand Paul's policies actually coming into action, which I think is a huge, huge win for libertarianism across the board. I'm sick and tired of hearing libertarians say that you can't be a libertarian unless you have the big L next to your name. You can quietly shut the fuck up, because that's not true. And it pisses me off to no end. I rarely swear in my show, but when I do, it's because I'm very upset about something. And I'm upset about hearing people go off about you can't be a real libertarian unless you have the big L. Justin Amash, Thomas Massie, Rand Paul, and I'll even go Mike Lee have done more for advancing libertarian policies and principles.
Walter Jones. No one ever remembers Walter Jones. Walter Jones wanted to impeach George Bush.
They have done more for libertarianism as Republican elected officials than the Libertarian Party has done in the past 40 plus years. I'm sick and tired of hearing you can't advance these principles and policies unless you're a libertarian. It's about principles over party. We preached that as libertarians all through 2016, and as soon as the election was over, that entire mantra died. They went after Austin Peterson. They went after all these libertarian Republicans. I'm sick of it. I want people to support whatever candidate, regardless of the letter after the name, whoever promotes those principles the best. Rand Paul 2024, 100% on board with it. Go.
Okay, so Matt, Brian went all Rand's bot on us. What's your final take?
Well, just real quick, I don't think Rand's going to run in 2024, unfortunately. Just personal. No?
We got to have you guys back on to fight to the death about this.
I don't think so. Personally, like, with the death of, like, the Weekly Standard and stuff like that, it creates a small vacuum for other great shows like the Brian Nichols podcast or the Rimzo Republic or the Muddy Waters of Freedom, for people to find out about non-interventionalist policy and, you know, being able to think correctly about stuff. And it's just a good way for people to learn that they don't need basic mainstream media in order to learn about what's going on in the news in a fun and usually more entertaining way than however you're getting it now.
Perfect. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We covered a lot of topic, and a lot of different topics in less than an hour. And this was a great conversation. We'll have to have both of you back on to fight to the death about Rand Paul. But until then, Brian, if people want to follow you on social media, check out your show and all that jazz, how could they do so?
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter and on Facebook at B Nichols Liberty. You can go ahead and follow the Brian Nichols Show over wherever you find your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it may be. You can also go to BrianNicholsShow.com. Any questions, comments, concerns, email me at Brian@BrianNicholsShow.com. And as always, if you're interested in supporting the Brian Nichols Show, head over to my Patreon, which exists for now at B Nichols Liberty. Or if you want to make a one-time PayPal donation, you can go ahead and email me there at thebriannicholsshow@gmail.com.
So, Matt, you just came out with another book, man. Congratulations. I hear it's doing great. People want to check out everything. How could they do so?
So if you want to check out The Muddied Waters of Freedom, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/muddiedwatersoffreedom, on Instagram at muddiedwatersoffreedom, on Twitter at muddied_waters, or you can find us at muddiedwatersoffreedom.com. If you're interested in my fiction work, you can find me on the Facebook. I think it's just Matt Wright, author. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't been there in a while. But you can find my Twitter is MRWright79.
Perfect.
And that's Wright as in WRIGHT.
Perfect, perfect. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming on tonight. It's been a blast. Folks, go ahead, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. I can promise you this. I don't have to worry about making money on this podcast because I've already outlived the weekly standard. So, you know, good, bad, and the ugly. Life's looking pretty good. We'll catch you next week, folks. Good night.
Peace.